The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. Century of Lies is a production of the Drug Truth Network for the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network, on the web at drugtruth.net. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of drugwarfacts.org.
My name is Vikas Ahmed. I'm a youth activist and advocate for young people in Pakistan. Especially, I'm working for young people who are living with the stigma of the gender identity, stigma of drugs, and stigma of health, which is HIV/AIDS. So I'm working for young people in Pakistan, and yeah.
What is so? Tell me about the work you do in Pakistan. You're doing organizing around for with Students for Sensible Drug Policy and around drug use. But I caught part of your panel a moment ago, but I walked in midway through. So I hate to ask you to repeat yourself, but could you tell me what you were just telling folks in the other room?
Yeah, actually. There we were discussing about the situation of Pakistan. If you see, in Pakistan, I'm working as an ambassador for SSDP in Pakistan, as well as I'm working for Youth Rise, an international working group. Both are global networks. In Pakistan this time, 8.9 million drug users are living, according to UNODC. Yeah, it's a big number. But internationally, when we see... mostly about the Pakistan, so they're publishing different news about the militancy and those people who are dying from the militancy. But we don't publish about the drug war happening in Pakistan. Because of the drug war, there are more than 700 people dying daily. It's the report of UNODC, and this is international reports that there are 700 people dying daily, 700 drug users dying daily. So it's a big number, but it's need an international highlighting. And yeah, there is like in local media, there is they're publishing different newspapers, but international it's need highlight that this number should be highlighted, and this needs a big support to stop this war on drug and the criminal policies. And policies should shift it from the criminal to the health. Public health policies and to the human rights based policies, where the drug users have access to their basic human rights to live equally and do not isolate. Because in Pakistan, the maximum number of drug users living in isolation and in exclusion from their communities, they are passing criminal charges from the government side, and they are also like they are. Three type of challenges to drug users. One is from the government, the government policies and war on drugs. Second is from the religious people. They consider it as a sin. They consider it against Islam. And because we are living in a Muslim society, so they consider it against the religion. And even when you're talking about the human rights for drug users, they are looking at you that are you a Muslim? So second thing, and third is misinformation or wrong information in community, the perception built by wrong information in community. So these three challenges killing daily a lot of young drug users.
When they talk about drug users, this would be any illicit drug, so it include hashish and marijuana as well as hard drugs, or are we looking, is that mostly just people use, or is that, are they counting basically in talking about people using the hard drugs? I mean, is there a larger number who are doing other stuff, or
it includes all type of drugs? Because if you see marijuana, cannabis, and poppies coming from Afghanistan through Pakistan, spreading in international market, and especially in the city where I am living, it's Peshawar, it's in the border of Afghanistan. So we see there are a lot of people suffer in the cities just because of this war on drugs.
it's a Muslim society, so I presume alcohol is not exactly widespread, or is that a have we here in the U.S. managed to corrupt people that way as well?
Yeah, it's a very good question. It's a very good question. Actually, in Pakistan, they ban alcohol. They consider it against the religion, and that's why they ban in the country. But in Pakistan, there are some areas like Sindh is a province in Pakistan where Karachi is the main capital of that province. There is allowed alcohol for non-Muslims. Right, but their local high court, Sindh High Court, just about a month ago, I saw in the news that they ordered that it should be stopped and it should be illegal if someone doing the business of alcohol in that area, even if they are non-Muslim. But then, just 2-3 days ago, our Supreme Court issued an order that we cancel that order, which are issued by the Supreme with the Sindh High Court, and they said that Sindh High Court don't have authority to publish such orders. So it was a good sign and a good move. But yeah, when it's banned, so like there are a lot of alcohol drinkers in Pakistan, and they don't have access to a quality of drinks or quality of wine. So yeah, it's a big challenge.
Well, in the U.S., when we banned it, people just made stills and brewed their own, which tends to be dangerous because you might have adulterants. Is that, I mean, wow, we call them moonshiners. Do you have do people produce alcohol for themselves since it's illegal?
Yeah, when it's illegal, the international and the quality products stop coming to Pakistan. So people producing these products locally, and they give them different names, and like Tara, and there are so many names for their local products. Even sometimes they smuggle international bottles and just mix morphines and different tablets and water in them, and then they are selling in the name of international brands in the Pakistani community. So the product is still coming to the Pakistani community, but it is not that much fair and that much quality product. So that's why it's also a big challenge for health perspective. If we see that people usually like those people who drink wine and alcohol, so they consume most of the time those unhealthy substances by the name of the quality of those brands. Yeah.
Wow. So tell me a little about the work that you're doing with Youth Rise. That's an organization I'm a little familiar with, but I know you do. The Youth Rise does work internationally, and well, obviously among youth. So.
Yeah. Actually, our organization working globally for drugs and harm reduction. We are more focusing on the young people to reduce harm related to our drugs, and for that purpose, we sensitize. We are doing different session with the young people. We sensitize, doing sensitization of parliamentarian. We have theater program. Our volunteers are going to different communities to promote awareness about the harm reduction in community and through their theaters and their different flares. Our activists are using social media as a tool to promote awareness and to connect with the different young people. Yeah, and recently we are working to establish a helpline for the drug users in Pakistan, because it's very much important to have a helpline for those people who use drugs to access. Because in Pakistan, if we see on one side that there are 8.9 million drug users, but there are only in government there are 30,000 beds in the government hospital per drug user. So on one side 8.9 million people, and on second side the health facilities for drug users are only 30,000. So it's very shameful for government as well. Like that, it's a big number. So yeah, but if we see that, but there is an opportunity as well for Pakistan if they legalize these drugs. So So on one side, there are 8.9 million citizens will access to a quality of product. Secondly, it will be very much better for the country economy. Third, it will also help people to get access to a quality of education about the drug use. As I mentioned that in the Fata, if you go to this is an area on the border of Afghanistan, if you go there, you will see people using drugs, like family parents sharing drugs with their children, and there is no issue because there are no government policies working, neither Afghanistan government work policies are implementing there, nor Pakistani. They have their own traditional policies, and those policies, when they supplied they produce drugs for different communities, in the same time in their communities, when you visit there, so parents teaching their children as well, their grandfather and their fathers teaching their children about the health education for drugs and to take the quality product, and they are so much experience. When you show them a product, so they will tell you that on which quality, what is the quality of this product. So it's because there is no policy, so that there is health education, which is traditional health education. But secondly, the people, the drug users have access to a quality product. There are no drug users who are living in the streets of that area. So it's like a model, but still the war is continuing there. Media don't have access to that area, to a Fata area. And most of our time I request to those media people, to a journalist, to go to and see the situation of Fata. Apart from the drug war, apart from the militancy and those things, you can check the people, those who use drugs. You will never see an isolated person and a person in exclusion in those communities, because there is no stigma or discrimination against drug users. They are considered as a part of their traditional community system. Yeah.
That's right. Wow. See, that's my... You heard me ranting a minute ago. I firmly believe that a lot of this is just based on we don't accept humanity of other people, whether whatever difference it is, whether it's where you come from or the color of your skin, or maybe it's just the, you know, I chose to use this drug. Okay, well, you're no longer human, and that's not the problem there. They accept the humanity of people around them. That's.
Yeah, in Fata area, especially like from Fata, there is about 2 kilometers away my city, Peshawar, right? There you will see hundreds of people living under the bridges, under the streets, taking drugs and excluded from their families, and their families hate them, their community hate them, their government have strict regulation in them, government throwing water on them sometime. Sending them to jails, and like every bad society and government can do that, they are doing with them. But on the other side, they are only 2 kilometers away, there is Fata area, and they are like the situation is better, even the drug is coming from that area. So there, when there is legalization, there is responsibility, and when there is responsibility, there is acceptability, and there is respect for human rights. So we need to legalize drug first, so it will bring all these to a society to be more respectable, and they will live. They will become a good taxpayer for our countries as well. Yeah.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Have any closing thoughts for our listeners? I know we're in between sessions and there's loads of people coming by. So, any closing thoughts?
Yeah, I will say that whenever in Pakistan, people ask me, "You are working for a drug user, but for drugs to be legalized, but drug kill people." So, I want to tell to our listeners that drugs do not kill people. It's the stigma, it's the exclusion from society, it's the discrimination, it's the war on drugs that kill people daily. In all over the world, drugs itself do not kill people. So enjoy the drugs and good time.
Thank you so much.
Thanks. Wow.
That was Vikas Ahmad. Vikas is a youth activist from Pakistan who's working in health and education with a focus on young people to have access to all their rights, including health, education, and enjoying a peaceful life. He started his activism at a very young age by joining the school scout team and volunteering with his village social organization, the Youth Welfare Society. Vikas is the current executive director for the Initiative for Youth and Sustainable Development in Pakistan and is a part of several different international and national networks, including Youth Peer Education Network, International AIDS Society, Youth Rise, and Students for Sensible Drug Policy. You're listening to Century of Lies, a production of the Drug Truth Network for the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network on the web at drugtruth.net. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of drugwarfacts.org. Well, you recall recently the White House floated a trial balloon, the possibility of U.S. Representative Tom Marino, a Republican from Pennsylvania, with some incredibly outdated ideas about drug policy, was potentially going to be named as the new drug czar. No official announcement ever got made by the White House. The trial balloon went up, and it looks like there are enough skeletons in Congressman Marino's closet that that trial balloon dropped like it was made of lead, the proverbial Led Zeppelin. Well, Tom Marino's withdrawing his name from consideration, considering it wasn't really ever put forward. That's interesting, but never mind. So we're left with Richard Baum, who is the acting director of the Office of National Drug Control Policy. Baum has been there for 18 years, and what's really intriguing, to me at least, is that there is very, very little that you can find, video, audio, by Richard Baum. It's amazing. I am looking, and when I can finally find something, I'll get it for you. He attended a UN University event in 2015 that had to do with the upcoming UNGAS. Recording of that event? Nowhere to be found. Again, if someone out there could please find any recordings of this guy and get them over to me, I would be very grateful. We'll find out more eventually. In fact, we'll find out what exactly the White House has in mind for the Office of National Drug Control Policy over the next few months. A memo was recently leaked by the White House, by the Drug Control Policy Office. Oh, heavens, who knows? It's Washington. The leak probably came from several different sources. On Friday, May 5th, the White House press briefing, Deputy Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders was asked about this leaked memo. And so let's listen.
Margaret.
Thank you, Sarah. Really interesting and I thought surprising story in Politico saying that there's a plan by the Trump administration to gut the Office of National Drug Control Policy. And I'm just wondering if you could tell us, is that report correct and why? Is the thinking to, I mean, obviously he cares about the opioid addiction problem. We've talked about that. You brought Chris Christie in the mix. What would be the reason for gutting that office, and is it to move it somewhere else? I've got a French election question also. I'll wait, though.
Look, my first piece of advice would never be to use Politico for a source of for your story, but in terms when it comes to the opioid epidemic, I think the president's been extremely clear this is a top priority for him. I certainly wouldn't get ahead of conversations about the budget. We haven't had a final document, and I think it would be ridiculous to comment on a draft version of something at this point.
Would you loosely address the idea that he's contemplating a substantial cut to that office and to move that sort of work outside of that office?
I'm not going to comment on ongoing discussions. Again, there's not a final document. When there is, we'd certainly be happy to discuss that. I think the bigger point here is the president has made very clear that the opioid epidemic in this country is a huge priority for him, something he is certainly very focused on tackling, and something that I think was ignored by the previous administration that won't go ignored in this one.
That was Margaret Talev asking a question of Sarah Huckabee Sanders regarding the leaked memo from the Office of National Drug Control Policy that indicates that the ONDCP, the Drug Czar's office, may be for the chop. Again, another trial balloon. We don't know what all is going to happen. And what's important is, it's not like the drug war is centered in the drug czar's office. That's a mouthpiece. But the real work still gets done by the Justice Department and Health and Human Services on the other side, on that soft or demand reduction side, the one that really works. The criminal justice stuff, that's still headed up by Attorney General Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III. And his extremely backward views on drug policy are already well known by listeners to the Century of Lies. We've played plenty of his stuff in the past. As more news comes out, we'll be reporting it. In the meantime, the one thing we do know, Congressman Tom Marino will not become our next drug czar, and the drug czar's office is going to be fighting for its continued existence. Expect to see a lot of Democrats coming forward to talk about how wonderful the drug czar's office is. Expect to see Republicans sitting back and just letting the other side do their work for them as they continue mounting a drug war. While we have time, let's hear from one of our old friends, Sanho Tree. Sanho gave the keynote address at the close of the Students for Sensible Drug Policy conference this year in Portland, Oregon. His address dealt with the dictator of the Philippines, Rodrigo Duterte. So let's hear a little bit of what Sanho had to say.
All right. You know, in the way Donald Trump tweets stuff that he probably shouldn't tweet, Duterte says these things on camera over and over again, including admissions that boggle the mind. For instance, he admitted recently that he had been taking fentanyl and using it and abusing it. Fentanyl, right? Which is, you know, many times 50 times more powerful than heroin or morphine. And he's been using this at a dose because he has chronic pain and other health issues. His doctor prescribed 1/4 of a patch, right? And he told his doctor, well, I told him I was taking the whole patch, quadruple the dose. And his doctor said, this is abuse levels. You have to stop. And he said this all this in front of cameras in the press conference, not realizing the irony that he was putting people to death for using methamphetamine, shabu it's called in the Philippines. And that's the primary drug we're talking about here. While he himself has been under the influence of fairly high doses of fentanyl. And this is the same person that Donald Trump congratulated, one of the first international leaders he called in December. Before he inaugurated, Donald Trump called Duterte and congratulated, and they talked to each other, and he congratulated Duterte on his drug war. He said, you're doing it the right way. So I'm not very hopeful in terms of getting U.S. policy to put pressure on the Philippines. And there are limitations to what it can do because the Philippines is also making a strategic pivot towards China and away from the U.S. But at the same time, there are other issues at play, so that there's a Trump Tower in Manila. Of course there is. And so one of the first things Duterte, President Duterte, does is appoint the developer of Trump Tower in Manila to be his special representative to the United States. Talk about cashing in on business connections, right? And so it's more important than ever to really pressure the State Department to take a more firm position on these things, even though the State Department is relegated to, you know, it's been marginalized under Secretary Tillerson. But what we have in the Philippines is a combination of two vicious forces. One is the long-term dehumanization of drug users and the drug trade. That the winds of drug policy reform and of harm reduction have not blown through the Philippines. It's neither a source country or a transit country for the U.S. in terms of drugs, so there's not a whole lot of focus from the U.S. On that and from other countries as well. And so you've had long-term dehumanization of people who use drugs, as well as long-term scapegoating. And so President Duterte basically projected a host of social ills and said, you know, these are the people who are responsible for this. Scapegoating, do people know where the term scapegoating comes from? The Old Testament? They would literally, in the old days, they confessed the sins of the village onto a goat and chased the goat out of the village. Presto, your sins are cleansed, right? That's where scapegoating comes from. And when you have that kind of dehumanization combined with vicious scapegoating, it's a formula for a classical pogrom. People know what pogroms are? It's not a term used much anymore, but in Tsarist Russia, there were many pogroms against Jews. And it was a vicious way to dehumanize and to attack and to marginalize and to drive people out and to steal and to kill and to do horrible things. And one of the things that made it possible was vicious propaganda. So the Tsarist secret police wrote a famous pamphlet, full of lies, of course, called The Protocols of the Elders of Zion, right, which is one of the most anti-Semitic texts ever written. And it became used during during Hitler, and others have used it since. But we have Duterte now issuing those kinds of lies at the presidential level. It matters what a president says, what a head of state says, whether it's Trump or Duterte. And when Duterte says, well, if you use shabu or meth for more than 6 months, your brain shrinks to the size of a walnut, then there's no saving you, you have to be killed. There's no point in salvaging you. This is the kind of this is what dehumanization allows. But it's also a form of this kind of scapegoating that I think Professor Reinerman from UC Santa Cruz, one of the great drug war sociologists, he had a lovely quote, and I don't like to read long passages, but this one is really just so succinct. He said, "Drugs are richly functional scapegoats. They provide elites with fig leaves to place over the unsightly social ills that are endemic to the social system over which they preside. They provide the public with a restricted aperture of attribution in which only the chemical boogeyman or lone deviant come into view, and the social causes of a cornucopia of complex problems are out of the picture." This is what the drug war is played out in. This is how it's being played out in the Philippines. And then Duterte also lies about, he makes facts up, much like our own president. But the Philippines DEA estimates there are 1.8 million drug abusers in the Philippines, or however they define it. Duterte magically picks a number out of the air, and he boosts up to 4 million. And he's got a six-year presidential term, which he's only just started. And he has vowed that he is not going to stop until the day he steps down. And it got so bad that there's a vicious murder of a South Korean businessman recently by the Philippines Narcotics Police, who had used, these are the elite police, they used a faked drug search warrant to raid this business. They kidnapped this South Korean businessman. They took him back to the National Police Headquarters, their inner sanctum, where no one's supposed to be able to get at him, and then they suffocated, they strangled him, they killed him. 2 weeks later, then they issue a ransom note to the family demanding payment. And the family paid without proof of life. They were finally exposed. This caused such a scandal in the Philippines. It dented Duterte's popularity for a while. He's still quite popular. But that kind of atrocity forced him to call off the police for a while and say, we have to figure out what's going on here, and we have to suspend police operations. He brings the military and the Philippines DEA to come in and fill in the drug war while the police are sidelined.
That was Sanho Tree, the director of the Drug Policy Project at the Institute for Policy Studies in Washington, D.C. Sanho was speaking at the Students for Sensible Drug Policy Conference in Portland, Oregon recently on the Philippine dictator Rodrigo Duterte. Hashtag boycott the Philippines, hashtag dump Duterte. And well, that's it for this week. Thank you for joining us. You have been listening to Century of Lies. We're a production of the Drug Truth Network for the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network on the web at drugtruth.net. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of drugwarfacts.org. The executive producer of the Drug Truth Network is Dean Becker. The Drug Truth Network is on Facebook. Please give its page a like. Drug War Facts is on Facebook, too. Give it a like and share it with friends. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Doug McVeigh, and of course also at Drug Policy Facts. Century of Lies and our sister program, Cultural Baggage, are both available as podcasts. Go to the homepage at drugtruth.net, and you'll find the URL to subscribe. We'll be back in a week with 30 minutes of news and information about the drug war and this century of lies. For now, for the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long! For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the century of lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.